Move on to the last case for this morning, United States against Brannon. Mr. Kovach.
May it please the court. Sean Brannon was convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm after a trial in the district court. There was no jury for that trial, and there were no witnesses for that trial. The case was presented to the district court on the basis of a stipulation by the parties. The stipulation was not a stipulation as to what particular witnesses would testify to, but rather the stipulation was a stipulation as to the facts of the matter. The district court adopted that stipulation as its findings of fact. On this appeal, Mr. Brannon raises the issue that those facts did not support his conviction beyond a reasonable doubt. There are three elements to this offense. Two of them are off the table. We stipulated them away. He does have a prior felony conviction, and the ammunition did travel in interstate commerce. The issue is, the third element, was he in knowing possession of the ammunition at the time stated in the indictment? Or as it's phrased, I think a more appropriate standard is, at the time stated in the indictment, did he have a present intention to exercise dominion and control over the ammunition?
But of course that can be proved circumstantially, and I take it there's no question in this case under the stipulations that this is his home. There's no question that one of the caches of ammunition was found in the master bedroom. I assume he sleeps in the master bedroom. And one of them was found in the top shelf of a closet on the main floor. So even if we forgot about the one found in the basement, maybe we don't need to, but he's, those kinds of links, it's in your home and it's right there where you're living, are usually enough to show, at a minimum, joint constructive possession, which would be it.
Well, they are often, but not always, and in the ammunition that was in the master bedroom was in a drawer in which there were two items of identification. I think there are two expired driver's license and an employee identification that belonged to someone else, his wife.
Also, one item of identification, as I recall, utility bill that belonged to him.
Well,
and that was the Wisconsin Gas Company contract in his name. And given that this was under this set of stipulated facts, it was up to the district judge to draw inferences from those facts, if you will, to use the somewhat discredited term. You know, they're sort of ultimate subsidiary facts are put there. The district judge is going to draw some inferences about these questions of ownership and the like. If he had wanted more opportunities to explore that, he certainly could have asked for a trial, couldn't he? I mean, he didn't have to do this on a stipulated.
Judge didn't have to consent to the jury waiver, and I suppose.
Right, he could have had it, but he could have had a full trial before the court. Just because you waive a jury doesn't mean it's a stipulated on paper. You could have a trial to the court where he sat up and testified.
He may have had the inherent right to do that. I mean, the parties get to put their case on, and I don't think a judge can say, "I want you to put on more evidence to either party." But I don't think
the judge is going to draw inferences from the evidence before him, and we know it's the home, and we know it's in parts of the home that he had ready access to, that he lives in, basically, the master bedroom. It's not behind locked doors in somebody else's part of the house. Why isn't that enough for why doesn't that permit the judge to find as a fact
because
joint constructive possession?
We cite, and the government essentially is saying, and that's the government's argument, if it's found in his home, that's enough.
Well, I'm adding a few extra facts, because where in the home it's found, I think, may also be pertinent, but it's found in places that he has access to.
Well, all right. But we cite in the brief five cases in which the contraband was found in the home where the defendant had ready access. And the government made no attempt to distinguish and didn't even cite those cases in its brief. The cases that the government did cite for saying in the home was enough, there was actually much more. And there was evidence that there was always ongoing drug dealing. It was either drugs or guns in the home. This is a case where there was a search warrant executed for a white-collar crime case, forgery. And here, there also, in those cases, there were guns and drugs which were readily usable. Here you had ammunition, which was not readily usable by anyone in the home or anyone who could find it. And so I think that the when you look at the five cases that we cited, I think two of them were from the circuit.
I thought he, maybe clear this up for me, I thought he admitted that it was, that he had, that it belonged to him at one time, but he forgot about
right.
it.
Right. And that's
the claim, isn't it?
Well, that was actually the claim that the government made the claim in before the district court that the best evidence was his admission. But it really wasn't an admission. What he said was, in the stipulation, that he had owned this.
Yeah, he had owned it, but he forgot about it.
He forgot about it.
But because it's found in the drawer in the master bedroom as opposed to, you know, in a, up in a, the rafters in a garage or something like that.
But the
you
case...
You assume if a dresser in the bedroom is something you have some fairly frequent contact with.
If he had exclusive possession of the bedroom, maybe, but he didn't.
But the wife, that part of the stipulation was the wife didn't, so she didn't own it either, right?
Well, no, the part of the stipulation was that's what she said, and part of the stipulated facts are that she lied to the police because she told the police, I never purchased a gun, and she's the only certifiable liar on this record where she said, I never purchased a gun, and the police say, oh, no, she did purchase two guns.
Well, that doesn't really matter because constructive possession can be sole or joint, so that's sort of a red herring here.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there are the cases that, I mean, some of the cases are right on point where there were, I cite a couple of marital bedroom cases in the brief, and the language in the one opinion that I quote in the brief is, it could have belonged to the husband or the wife or both of them together. But that's not enough because you have to show that it in fact belonged to the defendant, be the defendant either the husband or the wife. In fact, there's one case in there that they were both convicted and the convictions were both reversed for drugs found in the bedroom of both of them, readily accessible. And that conviction was reversed because there was nothing more. The argument...
I take it there weren't admissions in those cases.
I don't think there were admissions. I'm not sure. I mean, I just quoted the right. And I don't think there's an admission here.
Well, sure there is. You're just making a temporal argument because of his claim to have forgotten.
Right. But
and the judge is entitled to draw a contrary inference against your client, and
I would,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I think the best case on that issue that you raise is the case that the government cited in its brief, the Thomas case. In the Thomas case, the gun, this wasn't inside the house, but the weapon was found outside under a porch, and he was seen running away. And then he made a statement. They showed him the gun, and he said, yeah, that's the gun. Is this your gun? He makes a statement. Yeah, that's the gun. I bought it on the street. That's in the Thomas case. And the court in Thomas, it was this court, I believe. Yes, it was this court in Thomas, said that the statement that I just read, we do not think that constitutes an admission to possession of the gun. And then it cites the fact that it has to be an admission at the time stated in the indictment. And here, the statement is not, I mean, it's clear, he's saying on the face, I didn't have a present intention to use it because I didn't even know it was there.
Well, there doesn't need to be a present intention to use. That's not the legal standard.
Well, the present intention to exercise dominion and control, that's the legal standard. That's in Thomas. I think Thomas is the critical case, and it's the government's case. Is my lights on? So
your rebuttal time, yes, if you'd like to save a minute.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Hanstead?
Good morning, Your Honors. Gregory Hanstead for the United States.
So, Mr. Hanstead, what's the government relying on here? Are you relying on the admission where he says, yes, this was mine, but I forgot I had it? Or are you relying on the fact that this was his home and it was the master bedroom, da-da-da-da, all of that?
Your Honor, our position is that the district court could rationally have concluded from any combination of those facts that Mr. Branham knowingly possessed the firearm either on or about June 27th of 2001.
But you're not saying on or about means anything within the statute of limitations anymore, I take it.
Well, Your Honor, I know that that was a standard that had been mentioned by this court, and then in the Ross case in 2005, the court backed away and said that the canonical formula was now that the date charged had to be reasonably near what was proven at trial. Now, 6 months after that, in the United States versus Caldwell, this court again announced the general rule that as long as the offense was shown to have been committed at any time during the statute of limitations period, that sufficed. Now, I think that in Ross, the difference when compared with this case is that in Ross, the jury instructions were such that the jury could have convicted on the basis of possession of a different firearm entirely at a time period 4 years prior to what was charged in the indictment. Here we're clearly talking about the same ammunition, and it's clear that the defendant possessed it by his own admission, even accepting on its face this explanation that he had forgotten that he had it. He possessed it at some time no earlier than November 6th of 1999, given some of the other circumstantial evidence in the case.
Now, do you agree that forgetting that you had something means that you don't own it anymore?
I don't agree, Your Honor, with that. But more troublesome here is it seems to be an entirely too convenient excuse that the defendant offered to the law enforcement at the time that the search was executed.
But how is the judge supposed to make a... I mean, if he had testified to that, we could easily imagine the judge making a credibility finding and deciding that he's telling the truth when he says, yes, I remember buying the ammunition or whatever he said, and making an adverse credibility finding about the forgetting part. How are we supposed to handle it on this stipulated record?
Well, here, Your Honor, the other facts, the other circumstantial facts in the case support the conclusion that, or would support a rational fact finder in discrediting that part of Brandon's statement. Given where the ammunition was located, that is, that it's located in three different locations throughout the house, and given that Brandon acknowledged that, yes, it was his, a rational trier of fact would be warranted in concluding that when Brandon says, I forgot that I had it, it's simply an attempt to evade responsibility for possessing that ammunition.
Does the record show, I don't remember this, but maybe it just wasn't in the stipulation, how far down, if you will, in the dresser in the master bedroom these items were? Were they under a lot of clothes, or did you just open the drawer and there it was in plain view?
The stipulation doesn't make clear where within that dresser. It was in a dresser drawer,
right,
along
I
with
assume
some other
you opened
items.
The drawer, but some dresser drawers you'd have to do a serious amount of rooting to find what was in it, and others maybe you just open the drawer and there it is.
Right, and there's no indication where within the drawer it was found. And similarly, there's no indication where within the closet on the main floor the ammunition was found.
The top shelf.
It was the top shelf, and there were other things on that top shelf, other gun-related items, some of which the defendant acknowledged, again, that he had owned, but apparently had forgotten about.
Okay.
So again, Your Honors, the government's position is simply that given all of the circumstantial evidence in the case, given that this was Mr. Brandon's residence, given that the items were located in a number of areas that people typically have ready access to, and in that connection, it's worth noting that the Thomas case that defense counsel was talking about, the ammunition in that case was found outside of the house underneath a set of exterior stairs. And the court found in that case that under those circumstances, it might be possible the defendant had purchased the firearms at some point in the distant past. They had come to be underneath the stairs, and for that reason, he had forgotten about them. That's not the case here. Again, the ammunition is in a dresser drawer. It's in the top shelf of a closet on the main floor, and is also hidden above a ceiling tile in the basement. Given all those circumstances, and given that Brandon acknowledged that at least at some point, these were his, and at some point in the not-too-distant past, these were his. The court was certainly warranted and could rationally have concluded on the basis of those facts that Brandon possessed the items on or about June 27th of 2001 and could have chosen to discredit that part of Brandon's statement that was inconsistent with those other circumstantial facts, and that is the part of the statement in which he said that he forgot that he owned the ammunition.
Now I'm going to ask this question to Mr. Kovac if he gets up here. on rebuttal, but usually a stipulation is entered into to save a little time. After all is said and done in this case, do you think that was a good idea to enter into a stipulation and try this case on stipulated facts?
It certainly didn't have the efficiency effects that at least the government had contemplated.
Would you do it again, knowing how this all...
I don't think that I would, Your Honor.
But this case would have taken an hour to try, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
How about that, Mr. Kovac?
Mr. Kovac, yes.
How about do it again?
You would do it again?
Oh, sure. If that's the, but that's a tactical issue, and here we're on a legal issue. And actually, one thing I wanted to mention, the court asked, does forgetting mean that you don't own it? And that's not the issue here. It's a present intention to exercise dominion and control. And if you don't have that, then you're not guilty of this offense. And if you don't know it's there, you can't have a present intention to exercise dominion and control. As to the stipulation issue, this case provides a rare opportunity for this court to use its reviewing capacity and to unify the law, provide guidance to lower courts, because here, I mean, you rarely see a case like this. And so this court, and any appellate court, rarely gets an opportunity to expound on what is the meaning of a reasonable doubt. This is your chance to do it. Often you read appellate opinions when they say, well, the district court decided it this way, even reviewing, and we might have decided it differently, or the jury might have decided it differently, but we have to defer to them.
So that's why you tried it on stipulated facts, to give us the opportunity to expound.
Well, that wasn't my purpose. That's a benefit to you. I thought that this presented the case in the best light from, and actually, I did want to keep it a clean issue for appeal, because I thought on the facts that we won, and I didn't want to complicate it with this court being allowed to say, we have to defer to the trial court. Here, I don't think you have to. The facts are clean, and you look at the record, I mean, you look at the precedents that we've cited, I think we should win. I hope we do. But thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I will say, this for Judge Wood's benefit, these fellows are all from Milwaukee. So, yeah.
So they've seen you before.
A lot of history here.
Mr. Kovac tried a number of cases in my court 30 years ago. Never let him stipulate to him.
Mr.
Hanstead, who I know very well from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Milwaukee.
In the not quite so distant past for me.
Yeah. Bad idea, except
welcome to Chicago. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.